Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Meet Elizabeth Van Meter, yet another accomplished creative woman. She's an actress, documentary filmmaker, producer, and founder of The Purpose Project. We're going to get to that in a minute. Elizabeth always wanted to be an actress. She left her Meadville, Pennsylvania home before her senior year. After being accepted into a special high school affiliated with the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, she moved to New York City after graduating from the four-year program to pursue an acting career. And while she got work in theater, independent films, and print, it was a struggle to make ends meet. Even though Elizabeth never stopped auditioning, she found herself looking for something more. What wasn't clear? Then in 2008, her world came crashing down. After years of battling depression, her younger sister, Vicky, committed suicide at the age of 26. When Vicky was 11, she became the youngest pilot to fly east to west across the United States, and a year later, flew over the Atlantic to Scotland. Even though she was still acting and working at odd jobs, Elizabeth felt lost and says she had no idea how she got through that first year. However, she did reconnect with a friend and colleague whose company, Gorgeous Entertainment, produced an event, Japan Day at Central Park, a series of short documentaries featuring artists who were part of the festivities and shown on huge jumbotrons during the day's activities. Her friend took a chance and asked Elizabeth if she would produce some of the pieces scheduled to play at the 2009 festival. She had a general knowledge of film production thanks to a filmmaker ex-boyfriend. Elizabeth wound up producing 40 short films for Gorgeous Entertainment, honing her directing, filming, editing skills on the job. That same year, Elizabeth, still very much impacted by her sister's untimely death, founded the Purpose Project. Its goal? To find individuals here and abroad who, against all odds, are making positive changes in their corners of the world. The Purpose Project helps them achieve their dreams and shares their stories with a wider audience. Project 1, briefly, Tao's Library. It was born after Elizabeth was shown a photo of a young Vietnamese woman whose physical deformities, the result of being born near fields where our planes sprayed Agent Orange, did not prevent her from setting up a makeshift library for the children of her village. Tao's story became the basis of not only a documentary, but a theater performance. Well, now it's time to meet this passionate and committed woman. So, Elizabeth, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
That was long, huh? You've done a lot of stuff.
Oh, really? Because, you know, sometimes it feels like I haven't done much, but I'm just getting started.
Okay, there you go. Let's rewind and start with acting. So what was your fantasy growing up? Broadway, Hollywood, and where did this acting bug come from? Where were you bitten and when?
I think when I was two, I always remember, and like a lot of little kids dancing around the house and saying, you know, when I was able to answer that question, what do you want to be when you grow up? It was always an actress. And my parents encouraged me incredibly. I was from a small farm town, so we didn't have a school play or things like that. But we had forensics, speech and debate, and I was big on the speech team. So my category was dramatic interpretation. And so I was able to do some acting in junior high, high school, and I never wavered from that. I always wanted to be an actress.
But you didn't have lessons outside the home necessarily.
No lessons. But my mom was the coach of the speech team.
Aha!
So, yes.
So did you feel like you won the lottery when you got into the conservatory program at UNC?
Yes, I did. Well, first, I left my senior year because they had a high school program for just seniors. And they chose, I think it was like around 20 kids
from across the country. What made you decide to apply there as opposed to Juilliard or something?
Well, this was still in high school.
Right.
So they had a high school program.
Which is unusual, in other words.
Which is unusual. And then from that program, they allowed four of us into the conservatory. So I was actually down there for 5 years. But yes, I did feel like I won the lottery, and I was grateful to leave my town for more opportunity. I appreciate my town, but there was only so much you could do as an actress in Meadville.
You know, you were at a bit of a disadvantage. You were a year younger going to another state, not right around the corner from Pennsylvania. That must have been, while exciting, a little terrifying too.
Not so much because I wanted it so badly. I didn't feel like I was losing out on anything. I was ready for the next challenge.
You weren't scared.
No, no. It's only now as an adult I find that I battle fear more. When I was that age, I was pretty fearless.
What did you know? Kind of
exactly.
thing. And you look back and you say, you know, holy, you know, yeah. I can't believe that I just picked up and left home.
Right, right. But at the time, it was the right thing to do. I didn't even think twice. And now I overthink everything and kind of, you
Welcome
know.
To my world. So that was a very formative experience for you. And it also was a confidence builder, too?
It was. It was, absolutely. Because I was from a small town where being different and creative wasn't necessarily celebrated.
Sure.
If you stuck out in any way, it was fodder for unwanted attention, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so leaving and going to a place where there were a lot of other people like me was very exciting.
So you graduate.
Yeah.
And then you say, like everybody else, I'm going to New York City.
Right. I after I graduated college there from the conservatory, the day after graduation, I drove to New York City.
And didn't know what the hell you were going to do.
Right. Started sleeping on couches
sure.
and things like that.
And going on auditions?
Yes. I did have an agent at the time and started going on auditions. And it took a while just to get acclimated to survival.
You think?
Right. And finding an apartment and how I was going to make money. And I think at one point I had like 4 part-time jobs. And the auditioning was secondary at that point until I got settled. And then it became more about...
Did you get an agent?
I had an agent. When I moved here, I already had an agent because we had these... they're like little performances that mm-hmm. each of the bigger schools do for agents and casting directors, people like that. So you hope to get signed before you come. And I was lucky enough that I did have an agent before I came here.
As I said in the introduction, you got work, but it wasn't easy. I mean, yours is not an atypical story, you know, pounding the pavements and you know, hoping to, quote, be discovered. I would have to think that that was incredibly trying.
It was. It was. I would get jobs here and there, but never able to live solely on being an actor.
Mm-hmm. But did you feel that you were being satisfied, that it was working for you, that you might not have gotten the lead in, you know, Hello, Dolly?
I had moments, and it depended. There were some projects that I did, some plays that were really amazing roles.
Mm-hmm.
I did a play that was at the Fringe, and it won an award there, so we got a little bit of a run called The Infliction of Cruelty, and I had an amazing part in that, I remember, and it was very fulfilling. But then there are, you know, you'd go to these auditions where you're working on a scene that they give you that's 10 pages long for a couple weeks, and you pick out your outfit and you get all dressed up and you go down and they're running an hour behind and you go in the room and they say, we're only going to do the first page. You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm, it would happen mm-hmm. all the time. And after a while, you know, it starts to chip away at you.
And as it's chipping away at you, what's going on in your head? Maybe it's time to do something else, move on?
Yes. And I started to think, if my life is an expression of self, what am I saying with my life?
And how old are you when you're asking yourself this question?
30.
Okay. Yeah.
And grateful for the opportunity to play roles, but a lot of those roles were the girlfriend, the kind of stereotypical, not really juicy.
Sink your teeth into meaty roles.
Yeah.
So 30, I mean, considering that you were here, what, in your early 20s?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Was it too long?
Well, if I had a daughter and she told me she wanted to be an actress, I mean, I would want to encourage her dreams. But at the same time, it's a tough road.
So what was the course of events that made you start to slightly shift your focus? Was it your sister's death?
Before that, I was already feeling frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a story that's kind of come full circle in the last few months. And it was 10 years ago. I got cast in a small part in a film, an independent film. And my scene was with Bruce Dern. And I didn't know until I showed up that I was going to be doing this scene with him. And there were some other... who are now like A-list celebrities.
Famous people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a very small part, but I was so grateful to be there. And I was supposed to shoot that morning. And I show up and the costume designer changed the whole outfit, which was the basis of my character. And I couldn't really talk to the director because she was unavailable. And I waited all day and
it sucked.
Yeah. And so then they came up to me at the end of the day and they said, can you stay around for tomorrow? And I said, yeah, sure. And then all of a sudden they run in, they go, we need her now. We need her now. So they rush me in hair and makeup. And the hair guy puts a hot iron in an oven, which is not really meant for the kind of hair I have.
Or anybody's hair, right, for God's sake.
So he's trying to do my hair, and they're running in and yelling, the sun's going down, we need her now, we need her now. And he dropped the hot iron on my face.
Ay-yi-yi.
And I hear my flesh sizzle. And I yell out. And he's so nervous, he picks it up, and no one acknowledges that I've been
burned.
And at the point, I didn't have the confidence to say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't right. I was just grateful to be there and I wanted to do a good job kind of thing. So they rush me out onto the set. I see the sun's going down. I know like they're probably not going to be able to use this scene. Anyways, I'm in so much pain. Forgetting my lines that I've learned all because I can't think straight. And I'm there with Mr. Dern. And in between takes, he's saying really nice things to me, like, why don't I know who you are? You know, kind of thing. We end up wrapping and I knew that the chances they didn't get a reverse angle. I knew that my scene was going to be on the cutting room floor. And so I go back to the barn in a corner somewhere where no one can see me. And I start to get emotional because I think, like, what am I doing? You know, I got so excited about this. And I'm creating my life around these moments. And this is what it is. This is what you've worked so hard your whole life. And I start crying and I wipe my tears and I come out and Mr. Dern's standing right there and he said, I want to tell you something. I was an athlete when I was younger. I used to run long distance and the race is long. Don't you ever give up. Don't you ever, ever give up. You have something special.
Wow.
And he hugged me and it was this really powerful moment and it's something that I've held on to. And in May at the Bentonville Film Festival and where my film Tao's Library played, he was there. And I got to tell him that story. And we won the award for the audience award of the whole festival. And I saw him after and I said, I never gave up, Mr. Dern. I'm still in it. So, but that's a long story. But the point being that you said, were there moments when I felt like I can't do this anymore? And that was one, being burnt in the face.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
There's understatement for you. Yeah. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Elizabeth Van Meter, who happens to be a documentary filmmaker, an actress, a producer, and founder of The Purpose Project. I said we were going to get to The Purpose Project, but first, just talk about going from acting to behind the camera.
Right.
I mean, you made this transition because you wanted to, or it was just the next step to get away from this frustrated feeling?
Yeah. Yes, I wanted to tell stories, but I didn't know how to have more control over the telling of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that this was a way to do that. But it wasn't as calculated as that.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of happened, and I realized that it was a more empowering choice for me.
And so through a series of events, like this former boyfriend and then having this friend who ran Gorgeous Entertainment, mm-hmm. people were willing to take a chance on you. You had some basic
yes.
knowledge of film production, so you weren't a complete novice, right?
Right. Right. But I also was new to it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're doing a lot of independent, small, like I did a lot of sketch comedy before, plays with independent theater groups, there's a lot of production that the whole team kind of takes on, and
mm-hmm.
you get
exposed.
Yeah, you get a little sense of how mm-hmm. that all worked.
And so it was almost like a natural course of events. You get involved with making these short documentaries.
Right.
And then is that when you sort of moved into The Purpose Project?
Well, the making of the short documentaries really had no bearing on The Purpose Project. The Purpose Project was born out of seeing that photograph of Tao. Which I saw at a friend's house in Virginia, who's a Stephen Katz, who's a photojournalist who took that image during a trip to Vietnam. And it was from seeing that image and being haunted by that image and Tao's simple request. I wanted to do more, and I wanted to create something that could live on beyond Tao's library, and we could create more purpose projects from that.
But when the purpose project was formulating in your head, was there a connection to your sister?
Yes.
Your sister was notorious. I mean, what notoriety that she had.
Right.
Well, what 11-year-old flies a plane?
Right.
So go
right
there and then lead us into the purpose project.
My sister was incredibly intelligent, brilliant, fearless, and losing her in that way was devastating. We all knew that she had suffered from depression, but we never thought that that would happen. And trying to make sense of something or find out why, that's how the Purpose Project came about, because I felt as though I needed to find reasons why people go on, why, what is purpose?
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt as though I lost mine. And I saw this image of this woman who seemed to be full of purpose. And I wanted to be a part of that.
So it was just an obvious next step for you, wasn't it?
I think so. Yes. But at the time, nothing seemed obvious.
Did the Purpose Project exist before you saw that photo?
No.
No. So you see this photo.
Yes.
And you say, what am I going to do with Tao? Because
yes,
she's really hit me in the gut here.
Yes. Yes. So my friend who took this image, he was flipping through all of these images from a trip to Vietnam, a lot of children in orphanages born with Agent Orange poisoning. And he stopped on this image, and I see this young woman in a wheelchair outside of a storage structure, which I was told houses pig feed, fertilizer, and books. She had created a makeshift library from found and donated materials. And the children from the village come and they check out books in this library and read there every day.
What year is this?
2009.
Okay.
And he asked her, if you could have anything in the world, what would it be? And she said, $300 so I could buy more books for my library.
Wow.
You know, I was at that very specific time of feeling lost and not understanding what just happened. And I saw that powerful image and I heard that simple request and I went back to New York because my friend lives in Virginia. And I just couldn't get it out of my head. And I thought, well, I'm gonna find her, because he didn't know who she was or where she lived. But he had a fixer who had a 16-year-old stepdaughter on Facebook.
What's a fixer?
A fixer is someone who travels with you or lives in the country you're going to, acts as almost a translator and also makes sure everything's cool. Like makes
an
sure
intermediary, sort of.
Right.
Okay, so he had a fixer in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I need to find her because I want to bring her these books myself. And
so that was your initial goal.
Yeah.
I will donate. Not $300 so much, but the books, or
as many books as I
can
fit into a suitcase. And the reason behind some of that, too, is to ship books would be more expensive than the books themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted a reason to meet her.
Sure.
And to go there. And I also wanted to get more people involved. So I told people that I was going and I asked for donations. And I wanted Tao to feel like there were people here that heard her story and cared about her, too.
But at that point, a film was not necessarily on the front burner, was it?
No. I mean, I wanted to film the experience, but I didn't exactly know what that would look like. So I talked with my friend Steven, who took the photograph originally, and he and at the time his partner Chris came with camera equipment. At that point, I didn't know how to shoot at all, and we went over. But I found her first through the stepdaughter on Facebook, and then she started translating for me and talking to Tao, and Tao was very excited about us coming over.
You fly to Vietnam, a place you've never been before.
Right.
And you meet this amazing woman.
Yes.
And then your friend and his partner just start shooting.
Right.
And you get all this footage.
Well, a lot more happened between now and then. We've gone back over. I ended up shooting a lot, but there was more to the story. Yes.
What do you mean? Are you just going to say that?
You'll have to see the movie.
Ah, okay. So it's 2009.
Yes.
And the film is completed.
The film's completed in 2015.
In 2015. So this is kind of just hot off the presses.
Oh, yeah. We just finished in April.
And what's the reception been like?
Well, we went to our first festival.
And
we
said, yes, you won an audience award.
We won.
Much to your shock.
Absolutely. I always believed in the film and loved the film. But sometimes, you know, when you're behind a computer for 6 years, 7 years, you don't know if this story lives in your head alone.
So it's 2009 to 2015, but you're doing other things during the course of those years.
Yes, but the main focus was the film and other projects in regards to Tao that come to surface.
What were you living off of?
I was getting other jobs with Japan Day and other filming jobs, things like that.
But this was your kind of main raison d'etre, so to speak, this movie.
Yeah.
And I also said that it became a theatrical piece.
Yes.
Explain that.
So when I came back from Vietnam in 2010, Michael Wolk, who had hired me for Gorgeous
this Entertainment.
Right. Mm-hmm. They also had another branch of the company that was venturing into a solo theater festival called All for One.
And here in New York?
Yes, here in New York. And he had seen some of the footage and asked me to make a solo multimedia piece. And I thought, oh, no, I'm making a film. I don't want to distract myself with a solo show. And then I thought, well, this could be an amazing opportunity to try to hone the story because I had all this footage. But, you know, you can make 500 different films with all that footage, with 500 hours of film. So it was an amazing opportunity to try and get clear on the story I wanted to tell. And so I wrote this piece and I did it at the Cherry Lane Theater in New York.
And how did that go?
It went really, really well.
Now, who are you in this production?
I'm me telling a story. I mean, I do play a couple different characters, but it's storytelling. I don't feel as though I'm actually trying to embody the person that I'm. And it's multimedia. And so we perform that, or I perform that at the Cherry Lane, and another producer saw it, and he since had. We've booked it around the country and I've done it in various venues. And when I was an actor, no one ever asked me to do a solo show at the Cherry Lane Theater.
Hello.
it's like the mob, you know, when I leave, they pull me back in. But I don't consider myself an actor, and I consider myself a storyteller.
Today.
Yes.
Which is very different
from a
bunch of years ago.
Right.
So you're able to marry all these different again, roles, no pun intended.
I think so. Yeah, the things that are important to me are helping people, sharing, creating, and I'm able to do all of that in these various roles.
So now Elizabeth Van Meter has a purpose.
I think so.
Did you ever think that you might do something in connection with your sister's death?
You know, my sister and I... Oh, she loved movies, and I always thought that we would make a movie together, but I never thought it would be like this.
But did you ever think that you wanted to get her story out there?
I did.
The good, the bad, and the ugly?
I did, but I wanted to get it out there with her someday.
Mm.
I thought that we would make a movie together someday about her experience and all of her, the things that she had been through.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Elizabeth Van Meter, a documentary filmmaker, an actress, a producer, and founder of The Purpose Project. What other stories do you want to tell?
That's a really good question. I've been so engrossed in this story for so long. That's good. I there are a lot of other stories I want to tell, but I think that I need to find them or let them find me. And that's what happened I was open to seeing that photograph in a certain way.
Well, that the stars were sort of aligned for that. I believe in that.
You know,
you couldn't have planned that any better. He just happened to be with your friend at his house and he showed you these pictures and one of them just jumped out at you.
Exactly.
And you couldn't shake it.
Exactly. And I realize that I can't always wait for those moments to happen, but I believe that they will and they do. And I have some ideas out there, but nothing that I'm ready to talk about.
But I read that you also went to Peru.
Yes.
Why?
I went with a nonprofit that asked me to go, and I made a film about that experience up in the Andes Mountains with the Hapu-Caro people. It was an incredible experience. The latest one that was very meaningful was Japan. I went.
You just traveled to Japan?
In 2014.
And why'd you go there?
I was asked to make a short film about a group of kids who sing in this concert called Hand in Hand at Lincoln Center. And they're all from the regions that were affected by the tsunami earthquake.
Ah.
And so I went to their camp and watched them practicing and all that. And then I got to go to their hometowns and see.
From whence they cometh, kind of?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
their backstories.
Yes. That was an incredible experience and very moving. And it was just me. So I go with camera, equipment, all
you
that.
You were a one-man
band? I'm a one-man band. I had a translator.
But you did everything.
Yeah. And then I come back and I...
But you went under somebody's auspices to Japan. Somebody paid you to
this. Yeah. And that premiered at Lincoln Center at the concert, which was the most... That was an amazing moment where I felt like, wow, I am where I need to be. Because it was in the Rose Theater, which is, it's this beautiful theater, seats I think like 1,100 people. And you had the orchestra on stage and these all of these kids on these bleachers underneath this huge, huge screen. And the lights were out and they play the film and the audience got to see who these kids were. And when the lights came on, they saw the kids that they had just seen underneath the screen. And people started banging on the bleachers.
Because they were going nuts, huh?
And it wasn't because I did a good job. It was because they felt like they knew who these kids were and they wanted to show them love. And I remember being backstage and hearing like this thumping and this roar and thinking, wow, that's the kind of work I want to do. I want to connect people through art, through showing them showing them a side that they wouldn't know about this person.
So you found you, didn't you?
I think so.
You know what it's all about now for you.
Well, it always changes, doesn't
That's
it?
That's okay. That's okay.
But maybe
but
for moments.
There's not a sense of futility now. You're on a mission. That's the sort of joy of this show, meeting these women who are passionate and accomplished and committed, and you know what you're supposed to do.
I think so, yeah. And I say I think so because I'm the kind of person I don't ever think I have the answers. I think there's always room for possibility and something different to present itself. But I'm okay with that. Yes, I think so.
Well, I think that's okay. That you're okay. And that while you're open to things, you're just also not running around super naively. I mean, you know what
right.
it takes. And
right.
Well, I really wish you a lot of continued success. It sounds like you're on the right road, doesn't it, Elizabeth?
I think so.
You're afraid to go there, right? You're not going to jinx it. You're not going to jinx it. I'm looking forward to seeing Tao's library.
Oh, I can't wait for you to see it.
Oh, I bet it's going to be fabulous. And not only me, but everybody else.
Yes, everyone's going to be able to see it because it's going to be in movie theaters. It's going to be in stores and online.
Excellent. Well, it was really a pleasure to meet you, Elizabeth.
Such a pleasure.
I'm so glad that you found time in your schedule to
come and
have a conversation with me. It was great.
Thank you.
Much more continued success.
Thank you, Sandy.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.